Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, 22. Pride of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Drew Copas, Tim Getman, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Michael Glenn, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Jonathan Watkins, Elizabeth Jernigan, Christopher Shear, Paul Fidalgo, Andy Clements, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Tony Nam, Colleen Delaney, Joe Brack, Yasmin Toison, and Kimberly Gilbert. Bill Anderson picked a piece of stringy beef from between his yellow, broken teeth with the tip of a bowie knife. He sat by a fire on the Kansas Territory prairie, surrounded by his men. These were not ordinary men, travelers, cowhands, or drummers in search of a buyer for their wares. Oh no. In the flickering firelight from a shallow pit dug into flinty soil between endless miles of rolling hills, 29 hard faces watched Anderson as he laid out his plans for a forthcoming raid. These same men had been with him since the end of the war, trusted members of a gang he selected with care, with a purpose. After the collapse of the Confederacy and Lee's surrender at Gettysburg, remnants of a band known across the middle of America as Quantrell's Raiders were left without a cause, without an excuse or reason for their black deeds, other than simple greed and bloodlust. Bill Anderson had become widely known as Bloody Bill for his penchant to draw blood from victims, even those who were utterly defenseless. A trail of bodies marked Bloody Bill Anderson's passage across the states of Missouri and southern Illinois, and territories such as Kansas and Nebraska. Looting, robbing, and taking a terrible toll in human lives, the remaining members of Quantrill's Raiders roamed free as they had during the war, taking whatever they wanted by violence long after the Confederate States of America had ceased to exist. Running from the law now and then, from a small force of United States Marshals charged with police in vast empty stretches of the western frontier.
There's two banks in Dodge City. Both are full of cattlemen's money, according to what I've heard. We hit them both, hard and fast, right after they open. Divide up in two parties. Kill every sumbitch we see riding in, so folks don't get no crazy ideas about shooting back if they's got guns. They got him a young city marshal. Last name's Earp. He's got two or three part-time deputies, mostly farm boys who won't know which end of a gun shoots lead. We strike hard and fast, make examples out of them that tries to fight back. Gun them down like ducks coming off a pond. Turn them dirt streets red, and we won't have no trouble to speak of.
I hear Dodge can be a tough town, Bill. Maybe you hadn't ought to figure that'll be that easy.
Bill's pale gray eyes searched for the owner of the voice among the faces he could see.
Ain't no room in this here outfit for a man who ain't got backbone.
Anderson stood up slowly, his gaunt 6-foot frame outlined by what was left of his Confederate uniform, a pair of low-slung pistols tied around his slender waist.
Was that you, Curly? You the one who said that?
Curly was from Missouri, a seasoned veteran of dozens of raids despite his youth and poor eyesight requiring spectacles.
All I said was it might not be so easy.
You done turned yellow dog on us, Curly. I got no use for a damn coward. You ain't left me no choice, Curly. I gotta make an example out of you.
You ain't gonna Shoot me, Bill. We've been together since...
Jesus, Bill. All he said was Dodge had a real bad reputation as a tough town.
Bill glanced across at the speaker, a tall, whipcord, thin gunman named Tom Hicks, former artilleryman from Boonesboro, Tennessee.
Well, if you miss him so much, why don't you join him?
The acrid scent of gun smoke swept across the fire pit, a blue cloud carried away by the wind.
Any more you sons of bitches got anything to say?
Bill swept the assembled men with an icy stare.
We're gonna rob them Dodge City banks, just like I said. Any man in this here bunch who wants out can saddle his horse and ride. Or he can say what's on his mind. Wind up like Curly and Tom.
The rest of the gang just stood silently, watching Tom die.
I ain't hear nobody else complaining. Now, Dodge City, we gonna empty them vaults, kill a bunch of folks so everybody'll remember not to tangle with Bill Anderson and his boys. We'll show 'em.
We could hang that city marshal, string him up by his neck to a tree someplace so people in these parts will know we ain't just fooling around.
I like your idea, Jack. We'll hang that Earp fella right on Main Street. We'll put folks in this territory on notice we mean business.
Help me, Mama. Please help me. It hurts so bad, Mama.
Heads turned once again toward the dying man's prone form.
Somebody shut him up. I'm tired of hearing him complain.
I'll take care of it.
Jack Starr ambled over to Tom Hicks. He yanked a Dance Colt conversion from a crossbow holster tied to his waist.
He never did have no gumption. Now he's laying here crying for his mama like a sugar-tit baby.
I want you all to keep in mind, any sumbitch who turns yellow on me is gonna die just like those two. Now get some sleep, boys. Come the next week or so, we're gonna rob us a couple of banks and spill a little blood. I want everybody rested, so let's turn in.
Smoke Jensen took his wife in his arms.
Oh.
I love you, Sally. We won't be gone long, maybe 4 or 5 weeks. These Hereford crosses don't trail as well as Longhorn. It's those short legs that slow them down. Dodge City ain't all that far, and it's the closest place to sell these crossbreds to eastern cattle buyers. Let's just hope short legs won't keep us from making it that far.
Sally smiled up at Smoke's rugged face in the glow of an early morning sunrise peeking across the mountains.
Those short legs carry more beef. I told you so.
I can't remember a time when you didn't claim to be right.
I am always right.
Smoke cast a glance down at the meadow where more than 300 long yearling steers, fattened and ready for market, grazed peacefully under Pearlie's watchful eye while Cal saddled a young horse at the barn. An early fall had painted the grasses with frost, and as the sun rose, a silvery mist lifted from the meadow.
Right pretty sight, ain't it?
It is a pretty sight. Just make sure you get back here in one piece to see it with me for the rest of our lives.
I can't hardly see how there'd be any trouble. Nothing much between Dodge City railheads and here besides open country and a few hills.
You seem to have a knack for finding trouble in almost any place.
Oh, that was before. I figure all that's over now.
Promise me you'll avoid it, Smoke. I worry every time you're away.
Then stop worrying this time. This is going to be the most peaceful cattle drive in history. That's why I'm only taking Pearlie and Cal along. Because we've only got 300 steers to worry about. And it's empty country. I'm leaving Johnny to help you keep an eye on the place while we're gone, and to lend a hand with chores.
Just promise me you'll swing wide of trouble.
You've got my word on it, Sal.
Smoke and Sally turned toward the barn to see Cal clinging desperately to the saddle of a horse that he had obviously rubbed the wrong way.
Smoke! Sally! Ride him, cowboy!
Cal managed to survive 8 or 9 jumps aboard the colt's back before he went sailing over the bay's head.
Good God!
God, I nearly spared that boy gun and sprouted himself a pair of wings.
Oh, I hope he's okay, Smoke.
He's fine. That grass is near about as soft as a feather mattress. It'll teach him a thing or two.
Cal raised his head and noticed that Smoke and Sally were watching from the porch of the ranch house.
Sorry, boss. I reckon I pulled that cinch too tight first thing this morning on a half-broke bronc.
It wasn't the colt's fault, son. He gave you every warning he's got. There was a hump in his back a mile high. One of these days you're gonna learn to notice these things.
It ain't all that damn funny, Pearlie. Sorry for the language, Miss Jensen, but Pearlie hadn't often laughed so hard at a man's difficulties, especially on a cold morning like this.
The colt, a gentle-natured animal, looked down at Cal. Most good young horses resisted being broken to a saddle and bridle right at first. It was a way of showing they were bred with spirit.
You see yonder, Cal? That colt's plumb ready to apologize for what he'd done. Turn you into a sparrow on the fly when he's all dressed up to be a cowhand. He says he's sorry, by the way, he's holding his head down like that. Why, it even looks like he's got tears in his eyes.
If Ms. Jensen wasn't listening, I'd give you a piece of my mind, Pearlie. There ain't no need to poke so much fun at an honest mistake.
Mistakes can get a man killed. That young horse is trying to teach you a few things about how to stay alive.
And I'm afraid Pearlie's right, Cal.
Smoke and Sally walked over to Cal.
A man who wants to stay above ground in this wild part of the country had better learn to look for the little things. The warnings nature and his animals give you. That colt was telling you plain as day he wasn't ready for a rider. I've shown you how to lead a young horse off a few steps firsthand, so he gets used to the feel of a cinch. Some of them will crow hop a time or two, just to let you know they ain't happy about the idea of carrying a rider.
I remember you showed me that, boss. I reckon I just plumb forgot this morning.
Smoke watched Cal lead the bay away from the barn, and to the boy's credit, he was paying close attention to the colt's back. Smoke turned back to Sally.
You know, I'll miss you.
I'll miss you too, Smoke. Please remember what I said. If you can, let other men settle their own disputes.
I'll do it. Just so long as they don't wind up involving me or my friends or these Hereford yearlings. We worked hard for 2 years to get this breeding program started, and this'll be our first crop to sell. Now I've got a good feeling about it, that we're going to be making some money on these calves. Goodbye, Sally. If you need anything, send Johnny to town, and Lewis Longmont will do whatever's necessary to see that you get it, including helping if anybody shows up who don't belong.
We can take care of ourselves out here, in case you haven't noticed before. But if I need anything, I'll send for Lewis.
Pearlie, let's move him out.
Pearlie aimed a thumb at the barn.
Better make sure that boy don't get airborne again before we leave, boss. His feathers wasn't tested all that good a while ago.
Smoke watched Cal mount the bay very carefully with a much shorter grip on the reins.
Yeah, he's learning. A man can't learn it all at once. Takes time.
I'd never let him hear me say it, but he's making one hell of a fine cowboy. Works hard at everything he does and don't mind long hours or rough conditions, no matter how cold or hot or muddy it gets. He's a good kid, making a man out of himself in reasonable good time. He still ain't great shakes with a gun, mind you.
Well, most men are better off not knowing about guns. There's some things that just aren't necessary.
That's mighty strange advice coming from you.
It wasn't my idea to learn how to kill another man. It was circumstances that forced it on me, and Preacher was there to teach me what I needed to know.
You got regrets, boss?
I've got some, I reckon. Times were different back then. A man did what he had to do to stay alive.
Can't see how things have changed all that much. There's parts of this country still full of bad men who take what they want with a gun.
Well, that's where men like me can come in handy, if there's a need.
Cal rode up.
Sure hope the need don't arise on this trip. I got used to it being real peaceful this past summer.
No reason to believe we'll have anything different on this ride.
If this here bay colt is any indication of what's in store for us, we're in for a mighty tough drive. When a man sets out to go someplace and the first thing happens is he gets bucked off real hard, I don't see it as no good sign.
If that same feller got bucked off knowed a thing or two about horses, he wouldn't be tasting frosted grass for his breakfast.
Cal ignored Pearlie's remark to eye the burlap bag behind Smoke's saddle.
Since it was Pearlie who first made up the subject of breakfast, How about we eat some of them bear claws Salamade?
She made them for the trail, son. Hell, we ain't left yet.
Don't keep me from wanting one or two.
Oh, I reckon you gonna tell us getting throwed off for such hard work. It gave you an appetite.
You look for the worst way to put things, don't you?
Hey, Pearly, ride point until we get him across the valley. Me and Cal will gather up all the stragglers and be right behind you.
Without a reply, Pearly spurred his sorrel towards the front of the herd to guide the cattle. Smoke was satisfied. The trail drive to Dodge City had begun. Dave Cobb saw them on the horizon. They came from the east beneath a cloud of dust. Too many horsemen to be out in an empty stretch of Kansas prairie without a purpose. Dave was sweeping the narrow front porch of his trading post, a little store by a creek without a proper name. He called it simply Cobb's Trading Post at the Creek, which he had built out of logs and clay mud with his own hands, and with Myra's help. It had been one profitable trading season, the best in 8 years of strenuous toil to establish a spot east of Dodge City where cattlemen and farmers could purchase or trade for staples. He had even painted a sign for the roof out front, although the paint had faded some after several winters full of snow and sleet and heavy rains. He turned to the open doorway.
We got riders coming, Myra. A big bunch, maybe 20 or 30. They'll probably be wanting whiskey. Dust off them bottles of corn squeeze and give the counters a swipe or two. Wouldn't want to create no bad impression. They don't look like drovers. Wonder who the heck they could be.
Myra came to the door.
Just so they got money to spend. We can't pick and choose who comes this way. I'll get the children in the back so there won't be no distraction. Darlene can watch over the little ones. I'll put out the Arbuckle's coffee so they can see it real plain. A bunch that big's liable to need 3 or 4 pounds of good coffee. Be sure and tell them these beans are fresh off the wagon from St. Louis.
I'll mention it. From the looks of them, I'll bet they're after whiskey. Nearly all of them are carrying guns. Rifles booted to their saddles. Well, maybe they're hide hunters or something like that. Well, I can't quite figure out why they'd be carrying so many guns otherwise. Yeah, hunters is what they'll turn out to be.
Well, let's just hope they turn out to have some hard money to spend. Seems like it's too early for buffalo hunters. Buffalo haven't put on their winter hair yet. Darlene, you keep the baby quiet while we got customers. Shut the door and keep it shut. Give the baby a lump of brown sugar if he starts to cry.
Well, they'll be here in a few minutes. If this is our lucky day, we could sell plumb out of whiskey and coffee and licorice whips to boot. Most hide hunters have got a real sweet tooth. Well, now you be sure to tell them the Arbuckles has a peppermint stick in every bag. Oh, no, not just everybody knows that.
Dave's freckled face twisted into a frown when he got a closer look at the horseman now.
Something about him just don't look right to me.
A 12-gauge shotgun was hidden beneath the counter. If these men gave Dave any trouble, he was certain he could handle it. He went inside and put on a clean apron. While Myra was busy dusting off whiskey bottles with a turkey feather duster, he checked the loads in both barrels of his shotgun.
You be sure to tell Darlene to pull the latch shut on the door to the bedroom.
Why'd you say that?
Just an ordinary precaution when there's so many of them, Myra. Wouldn't want some hide hunter to wander into the back by mistake. Because I know we'll be busy up front, selling all sorts of things.
Myra walked to a window, shading her eyes from the sun with a hand.
I do have an awful lot of guns, Dave. Nearly all of them I can see are wearing pistols. I got rifles, too.
Yeah. Well, they're probably just hungry and thirsty cowboys. I won't judge men by the number of guns they carry. There could be a posse from Wichita looking for bad men. You know, this part of the territory can have some dishonest men crossing on the way to other places. Yeah. Well, yeah, don't worry, darling. Everything's gonna be okay. I've got the shotgun loaded. You get those whiskey bottles dusted off now so they shine like new.
I don't think I like the looks of them.
Dave looked back at the window as dozens of riders came to a halt at the hitch rails. Smoothing the front of his apron, he came around the counter to welcome the new arrivals, walking out onto the freshly swept porch. A thin man dressed in gray Confederate pants and stovepipe cavalry boots swung down from his horse before the others dismounted. The man wore a battered Confederate cavalry hat, even though the war had been over for several years.
Howdy, gentlemen. Welcome to the Cobb's Trading Post. What can I do for you?
Whiskey?
Oh, got plenty of it. $6 a bottle, and it's fresh from Kentucky. The best the money can buy.
You got fatback and beans?
We got plenty of both, and a fresh shipment of Arbuckle's coffee beans.
We'll take it. All of it. You start putting it in tow sacks.
Sorry, mister, but I haven't seen the color of your money yet. You didn't even ask the price of the coffee or beans.
Don't care about the price. We wasn't aiming to pay for none of it anyways.
I've got a loaded shotgun inside, mister. You'll pay for the goods you want, or you'll get a taste of buckshot.
Buckshot? What the hell is a little bit of buckshot going to do to keep us from taking what we want?
I'm warning you, gentlemen. I'm a good shot with a scattergun.
You ain't going to have time to fetch that scattergun, boy.
You won't get away with a robbery like this.
Who says?
We've got lawmen over in Dodge City, and a territorial militia, the United States Marshals. You'll go to jail if you try to rob us.
You keep saying us. Is somebody else inside?
My wife and my children. Now I'm warning all of you to get back to your horses and ride away from here unless you want serious trouble.
Serious trouble? I ain't exactly sure what you mean, mister.
I'll shoot any of you who try to take supplies from our store without paying for them.
Like I said, son, you ain't gonna live long enough to get your hands on that gun. I'll put so many holes in you before you can turn around, you'll leak like a rusty bucket.
This is the last time I warn you. Get back on your horses and ride off before I am forced to take drastic measures.
Oh, where are my manners? Let me introduce myself. I'm Bill Anderson. Maybe you heard of me and my boys. Some folks are taking to calling me Bloody Bill.
Dave's stomach twisted into a knot, and his throat went dry like sand. Everyone in the territory knew about Bloody Bill Anderson and his desperados, but it was rumored he'd gone south to Texas. No one had spotted him or reported any of his recent exploits to the weekly newspapers, not for more than a year now. Seemed to David, could have been even longer.
Word was that you went to Texas. We don't want no trouble, Mr. Anderson, but you can't just up and take what's in my store without paying for it.
Who the hell you say? For a storekeeper, you sure as hell can't count. There's 27 of us and ain't but one of you. I believe they call it arithmetic.
I can count.
Let me see what kind of women folk you got inside. Some of my boys ain't been with a woman for quite a spell.
You won't lay a hand on my Myra or Darlene.
Sir, I'm done talking now.
Dave Cobb lay in a pool of his own spreading blood. His slowing heart pounded in his ears. The loneliness of death creeping in. The steers drifted easily across lower Colorado territory, valleys and grasslands, grazing as they traveled, losing little of the weight they'd gained on good pastures at Sugarloaf during the summer. Smoke stopped on a wooded ridge overlooking Big Sandy Creek, just southeast of a tiny settlement called Last Chance. They'd been on the trail for 3 uneventful days, now entering some of lower Colorado's flatlands, where the countryside turned drier, making grass scarce, harder to find. It was also a region where occasional bands of renegade Osage warriors preyed on small wagon trains or widely scattered ranches, although most of the Osages were on reservations down in Indian territory now. This had once been Ute and Arapaho country, sometimes frequented by roving bands of Cheyenne, until the treaties brought an end to most of the hostilities. But things had not always been so peaceful in those days when Smoking Preacher had fought and then made peace with the Shoshones and the Utes. He was glad those days were behind him. But there were times when he was alone with his thoughts, when he missed that special closeness he felt toward Preacher. Smoke scanned the valley below, passing an experienced eye along the creek banks. All was quiet. Native birds fluttered among cottonwood and willow branches beside the water, a sure sign no danger was present. Smoke turned back in the saddle to signal Pearlie and Cal to bring the herd over the ridge. He saw that Pearlie was already riding his way.
Seems like we got something, or somebody who's following us. Every now and then, the blackbirds rise up all at once, maybe half a mile or so behind us. And then they settle back down till whatever it is moves them again. Could be a grizzly, I reckon. Or it could be something else. Whatever it is, it damn sure appears to be following us.
Smoke watched for signs of the blackbirds. For a few moments, all was still behind them.
Can't see no disturbance now. Keep your eyes peeled. If it happens again, give me a sharp whistle, and I'll ride back to see what's there. It won't be a grizzly in this low country so late in the year. They're headed to the High Lonesome to find places to hibernate for the winter by now. I expect it's something else.
This country ain't known for rustlers. According to what Lewis told me this summer, hardly a thing happens down here now that the engines is cleared out.
I hadn't heard of any trouble in this part of the territory either. Maybe it's a cougar. A hungry mountain lion will sometimes follow a herd of cattle or buffalo for miles, hoping to get a chance at a cripple or a calf. Just keep your eyes open and your rifle handy.
If it ain't nothing but a big cat, I'll take a shot over its head to scare it off. No sense in killing a graceful animal like that just because it's hungry.
Yeah, most of them will hide from the scent of a man. That's why I don't think we've got a cougar following us. It would catch our smell and leave us alone. Same goes for most wild creatures, even a bear. They don't look for man scent. Usually try to get clear of it quick as they can.
It's the two-legged creatures I worry about. Some of them don't scare off so easy.
You worry too much.
Well, shoot. There's times when things need a good dose of worrying over.
Following a gentle slope, Smoke rode to the stream and let his stud drink its fill. A few at a time, the gentle Herefords came to the water's edge. Glancing backward, Smoke saw Pearlie and Cal bring the last of the steers over the rise, pushing them toward the creek at an easy gait. All seemed calm and quiet. Pearlie's concerns about being followed had come to nothing. Suddenly, a swarm of blackbirds swirled into the sky behind him, circling, alarmed by something beneath them. Smoke's full attention remained on the birds for several seconds.
Something is back there.
Smoke pulled his Winchester 44 rifle from its boot. He heeled the Palouse past water-seeking cattle to gallop to the top of the rise. Smoke found Pearlie on the ridge, holding his horse in check.
That just ain't natural. Something got him scared. See how they won't settle back into the trees for a spell? Blackbird ain't the spooky sort. Something's back yonder.
I'll find out what it is. Keep these steers bunched tight at the creek till I get back. Don't leave them for any reason.
Smoke urged his horse to a lope and rode back along the trail, searching the trees along hillsides and in deep arroyos for any sign of movement, any shape in the forest that didn't belong. The blackbirds continued to fly in looping circles above the trees, unwilling to return to their perches. Something agitated horse. Smoke's gaze swept the trees. He trusted the Palouse's keen sight and hearing. He leveled a shell into the firing chamber of his rifle and rested the stock on his thigh. Four dim shapes fanned out in an uneven line, appeared, and then vanished in forest shadows.
Men on horses.
Then he clearly saw the outline of an engine aboard a Pinto pony, coming toward him at a trot, a long-barreled rifle in his hand.
Osage Renegades.
All four engines were visible now, coming at him from the trees, and all were carrying rifles. Smoke was out in the open in a grassy meadow, an easy target if he remained in one place. Smoke wheeled the stud to the left and drummed his heels into its sides. He leaned over the Palouse's neck to make himself harder to hit with a rifle shot. Smoke rode hard for a stand of juniper in order to be out of the line of fire. Smoke swung to the ground, dropping the stud reins to find an opening in the pines where he could take aim himself. A lone Osage warrior clad in buckskins, his skull shaved clean and painted black and orange in a design, galloped his pony out of the woods. Smoke took careful aim. Another Osage came charging out of the woods, a rifle to his shoulder. Smoke calmly levered a cartridge into the chamber and took aim again. The engine landed in the grass limply, arms and legs askew, skidding across tufts of curly mesquite until he slid to a stop near the base of a slender oak tree that was shedding its colorful fall leaves. A third engine swerved his sorrel pony toward the junipers where Smoke was making his stand.
Damn fool.
The fourth Osage brought his pony to a bounding halt more than 100 yards from the junipers. He looked both ways at his fallen companions, as though he couldn't quite believe what he was seeing. Then his head turned, facing Smoke, and the look on his face was one of pure hatred. Smoke stepped around the juniper trees and held his Winchester over his head.
Hey! Hey, Silate!
As Smoke's cry filled the silent meadow, the Osage suddenly stopped and stared at the white man. For a time, those two men stared at each other, neither moving or making a sound. The Osage was clearly puzzled how a white man could know the war cry of his old enemy, the Utes.
Savate!
The Osage remained frozen where he was for a few more seconds. Then he turned his pony around and made a hasty retreat toward the forest from which he had come, his pony's mane and tail flying in the wind until he was out of sight. A moment later, rifle in hand, Pearlie came galloping across a row of low hills, ready to lend a hand in the fight. Smoke stepped around the juniper so Pearlie could see him, waving his rifle over his head.
What happened, boss? I heard all the shooting and I come a-running.
Four Indians. Osages by their shaved heads. I dropped three of them. One rode off when he saw I wasn't going to give him any special consideration.
How come you didn't come after me and Cal so we could lend you a hand?
Didn't figure I needed any help, Pearlie. But you got my thanks anyway.
Damn near any man needs help up against four engines. But I guess you would be the exception.
They had old single-shot rifles. Wasn't much of a fight, really. They were young Osage bucks. Inexperienced. They came straight at me. It was like target practice.
Uh-huh. Well, I reckon I best get back to the herd. Before you tell me that's where I'm supposed to be.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Pearlie. Me and Sally ain't paying you wages to sit here and jaw with me about Indians or how they ought to be fought. Now get!
Later on, Cal squatted across from the flames of their campfire, watching Pearlie ride slow circles around the steers until they bedded down for the night.
Boss, could you tell me about them Indians? Pearlie told me there was Osages and that you killed four of them.
Pearlie's always been given over to exaggeration. I shot three that were coming straight at me. The fourth showed good sense and rode off.
I knowed we was gonna have trouble on this drive as soon as that bay colt throwed me off. It was a message from the Almighty telling us to be ready for more than a few difficulties. I never was all that superstitious about such things, but when that bay pitched me over its head, I could feel it in my bones that we was headed into bad situations.
What you felt in your bones, son, was the fall you took off that colt's back.
It was more than that, Mr. Jensen. I had this real clear sensation there was going to be some shooting on this drive, and that whoever it was going to be shooting at us.
If that happens, I'll take care of it. You handle your jobs with the steers, and I'll handle any problems we run into.
You figure that one Osage will come back with some more of his friends?
Not likely. They were young renegades. Probably slipped off the reservation down in the Nations looking to get into a little mischief. Maybe rob a rancher or two. They hadn't banked on running into somebody who shot back. I figure we'll have a peaceful drive all the way to Dodge. If you don't get bucked off that colt again.
Oh, come on, boss. Pearlie's still laughing about it.
He's only funning you because he cares about you, son. If you can't take a little teasing once in a while, you'll never make it at the Sugar Loaf.
I'm getting even with Pearlie tonight. Just so you'll know it's only a joke. He's been riding me so hard about getting bucked off that I've been thinking of ways to shut him up.
As soon as he comes in from riding night herd, he'll do what he always does. Head straight for this here coffee pot and then sit down on his bedroll, pull off his boots. I found this great big cocklebur tangled up in the bay colt's tail whilst I was unsaddling him. I combed it out. Soon as Pearly goes to sleep, I'm gonna put that cocklebur in one of his boots. You ever notice the way Pearly puts them on in the morning? First he stands up, and then he stomps one foot at a time into his boots. When he lands on that burr, we're gonna find out if Pearly can dance as good as he can sing.
He'll know you put it there.
Well, I'm counting on it. Maybe then he'll think twice about reminding me how high I was flying when I got thrown back at the ranch.
The two of you are worse than a couple of children. Like when he mixed castor oil in the syrup tin last year, knowing you'd be the first to cover your flapjacks with it and stuff your mouth full. I laughed so hard I nearly broke a rib.
Now that wasn't all that funny, you know. I swallowed a whole bunch of it before I got the taste. I was in the outhouse nearly all the day, seemed like. Mrs. Jensen took to laughing every time she saw me run for the two-holer back of the barn. One time I almost didn't make it. She hadn't ought to laugh at me so much. Pearly never did stop laughing all day or the next morning either.
It's because they like you, Cal. Sally loves you like you were one of our own. And remember, you got your revenge when you put a dead rattlesnake in his bunk under his blankets. I never heard such a yell as that come from the bunkhouse that night. I bet they heard it all the way to Big Rock.
Nearly busted the inside of my ears. Never heard so many cuss words strung together before. He cussed till he ran out of wind.
Smoke's thoughts went back then to the ranch, wondering about Sally, wishing he could take her in his arms. It still amazed him that a woman could make him feel that way. He'd been sure he'd spend his life as a bachelor. That was until he met Sally. She had a power over him that no one else ever had, if you didn't count Preacher, and that wasn't the same thing. They had a good life at Sugarloaf, surrounded by good friends and neighbors. It was more than Smoke had ever dreamed of having, after some mighty rough beginnings.
What you thinking about?
Sally and the ranch is all.
If you'll pardon me for saying it on account of it's personal, you gotta be the luckiest man alive, Mr. Jensen, to have found yourself a woman like Ms. Jensen. Times I lay there at night wishing I could find me a good woman like her. Don't reckon I ever will.
You're young yet, son. Give it time. I never thought I'd find Sally. I suppose it's fair to say she found me. I was headed down some of the wrong trails when she came along. That little woman brought me up short like she'd put a spade bit in my mouth. Turned my whole life around.
Pearly told me one time that you was a hard-nosed killer beforehand. That you were a shootist with a mean reputation.
Maybe I was. I never drew a gun on a man who wasn't going for his gun first, if that matters. But I did some things for the wrong reasons. Yeah, Sally made me see the errors of my ways. She can give a dressing down that would put any preacher in Colorado Territory to shame.
Oh, I know that part real well, boss. When she gets on a mad and starts shaking that finger at me when I forget sometimes to do my chores just right, it's the same as just being whipped with a willow switch. She can hurt a man worse with her tongue and that finger than any woman I ever run across. Even worse than my ma could.
Yeah, Sally can be temperamental. The worst part is, she's always right about things. I keep wishing that just once she'd be wrong so I could remind her of it.
Yeah. But then she's got that sweet side, like honey. She'll put her hand on my shoulder or maybe just give me a certain look and I get plumb teary-eyed sometimes. When I had that whooping cough that time, she mothered me like a hen. Like I said, you ought to count yourself as being mighty lucky to have her.
I know how lucky I am, Cal. Never a day passes when I don't think about it.
False dawn was brightening eastern skies when some inner sense awakened Smoke to danger. He reached for his rifle, turning over in his bedroll slowly, blinking sleep from his eyes. He lay for a moment, listening. Off to his right, Cal rode slowly around the sleeping herd until Smoke noticed that some of the steers were coming to their feet with ears cocked southward. Smoke examined the southern skyline, passing a slow glance across each dark hill, every low spot. Cal stopped his horse, standing in his stirrups, also aware that something was wrong, something disturbing the cattle enough to bring him up before dawn. Then Smoke saw what was frightening the steers. In a swale between two hills, a wolf pack trotted toward the cattle scent. In packs, timber wolves or gray wolves were often able to bring down a calf. Until the clever animals got closer, they had no way of knowing the size of the cows they smelled on night winds. Smoke came to his feet, balancing his Winchester in the crook of his arm. He stepped into his boots quietly so as not to awaken Pearlie, and he walked softly toward Cal.
It's a wolf pack. No need to worry. Soon as those smart creatures see how big our steers are, they'll leave them alone. A wolf's too smart to take on any kind of animal this size, even when they're traveling in a pack like this bunch.
There was that Lobo a couple of years back, if you recall. Came right up to barns like he wasn't scared of nothing.
A big Lobo timber wolf is a bit different. They aren't as afraid of a man's smell. These'll be gray wolves in this flat country. If they get any closer, I'll fire a shot over their heads, and that'll be the end of it.
How come you don't just shoot one of them? If you shoot one, the others are sure enough hightail out of here.
No reason to kill it. They're doing what nature meant for them to do. Look for food. They scented these cattle on the wind, and to them, it's like a dinner bell. But they're smart, too. A 600-pound steer with a set of horns could kill a wolf easily. If it got the chance and if it was range-bred like ours, wolves have instincts that tell them what to do and what to avoid.
Sure do look spooky trotting across the dark grass the way they are.
Yeah, to me, they're beautiful animals. All they want is something to eat. Watch and you'll learn something about wolves. Unless I'm dead wrong, that big male will stop shortly. He'll size up the situation and turn away. For two reasons. He'll smell men and smoke from the coals in our fire pit. And he'll know these steers are too big to bring down.
You never are much when it comes to shooting animals. I've noticed. Even something as dangerous as a wolf.
No need. I suppose it's because I've got respect for all of nature's creatures. Even a polecat. A polecat don't have but one weapon, and that's his stink. He won't use it unless he feels threatened.
But a wolf eats meat, boss.
Only the meat it can catch and bring down. Now keep your eyes on that big male. He's about to call off the hunt. Wait and see if I'm not right about it.
Almost at once, the heavy male wolf halted in its tracks to sniff the wind, swinging its massive head back and forth to take on more scent. The wolf's tail went up as a silent warning to the others behind it, and just as suddenly, the other wolves came to a stop. For half a minute or more, the wolves remained frozen to the spot, watching the herd of steers. Then, as Smoke predicted, the big male turned away and trotted off, leading his pack into a dry creek bed west of the herd.
You sure were right about it. They wasn't near as brave as that big Lobo that came to the barns.
A Lobo is different. He's alone for a reason. He don't think like other wolves, and that's why he doesn't run with a pack like those we just saw. A Lobo is dangerous, but he's still real smart. Real hard to kill in case you've never tried. Some way or another, a Lobo can damn near feel a rifle's sights on him.
These cows don't seem agitated. I reckon they didn't catch no wolf smell real strong, or they'd be milling around acting like they was nervous about it.
Sally was right about a Hereford being a gentler breed, and it shows in the crosses. Takes a lot to spook 'em. Like I told you last night, Sally's right about damn near everything. And a mite too quick to remind me of it.
That's about the most half-hearted complaint I ever heard, boss.
It wasn't a complaint, son. Just a simple statement of plain fact.
A shadow moved near the fire pit.
Ah! Oh, 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 dang,
Pearlie was hopping up and down on one foot.
What the hell?
Pearlie was on his rump, holding something up to his face. Then his head snapped toward the herd.
Where the hell's that boy?
When I get my hands around his skinny little neck, I'm a choking plum to death.
What's happened, Pearly? Looked like he was dancing a while ago, only I didn't hear no fiddler playing. Where's the music?
I'm gonna kill you deader than a gate hinge if I can get my hands on you, boy. I could be a cripple the rest of my life for what you just done to me. There's blood in my boot, and my sock's ringing wet. I'm liable to bleed to death here all on account of some kid who thinks he's done something funny. Damn! Damn, damn, that hurts!
Whoopee! I got you back, Pearly. Now who's doing the laughing?
I swear I'll get you if it plumb takes me the rest of my life.
The herd stretched out for a quarter mile, moving slowly, grazing where the steers could find grass. The land yawning before them was empty. Not a sign of civilization in this section of southwestern Colorado, beyond a few widely scattered wagon ruts where seldom used trails crisscrossed the countryside. Smoke Road Point, guiding the way, using dead reckoning rather than a marked route to follow with the angle of the sun as a guidepost. Other than the skirmish with the Osage, the trip was going peacefully enough. By Smoke's old standard, shooting three renegades bent on stealing a few beeves was a relatively minor irritation. Off in the distance, he could see a faint green line, the Arkansas River, where it wound its way across territorial boundaries into Kansas. This was land he seldom traveled, and the Kansas prairies were not to his liking. Mile after mile of low flint hills without trees in most places, featureless region where only the most determined settlers tried to establish farms and homesteads, raising a few cattle and sheep and living in sod dugouts, existing on small gardens and what meat they could raise during years when rains came. Thinking on it to pass time, Smoke supposed he'd been spoiled by the raw beauty of the High Lonesome in Colorado. He'd become a man with a kinship to the mountains and high valleys, never quite feeling at home anyplace else. An hour later, when the river was in sight, he saw a lone horseman coming toward him at a long, ground-eaten trot.
He's in some kind of hurry. Maybe he's got troubles.
A quarter hour more, and the rider approached Smoke.
Howdy, mister.
The man was dressed in a badly worn business suit and a bowler hat, a drummer by his appearance, although he had no pack horse or mule to carry whatever he might be peddling.
I saw your dust as I was crossing the river. I thought I'd better warn you.
The man carried a shotgun slung from his saddle by a leather shoulder strap, a hunting gun some men called a fowler's piece, used for ducks and geese. The slight bulge of a small caliber pistol showed beneath his coat.
Warn me about what?
Robbers! By way of introduction, I'm Horace Grimes from Springfield. Be cautious as you cross over into Kansas. A gang of thieves and murderers is on the prowl in the east and south of Dodge City. It's an awful story, what happened to me and to a shopkeeper and his family. I feel lucky to have escaped with my life.
Tell me about it.
Well, my personal experience with them was, upon reflection, very fortunate. My mule, along with all my buttons and fasteners, were stolen from my campsite while I was away hunting wild turkey for supper. I got back just in time to see a gang of 25 or 30 men stealing my mule. They were hard-looking characters, carrying an assortment of weaponry. So I remained in hiding up on a ridge while they scattered my inventory all over the ground in search of something more valuable, I presume. They took my mule and pack saddle, leaving me no way to carry what I sell. I'm a sales representative with the Springfield Fastener Company. I'm a peaceful man, heading for Dodge City to sell my wares. But the gang of thieves rode off in the direction of Dodge, leaving me no choice but to ride around the city. I've been looking for some sort of military outpost or a peace officer where I can report to the proper authorities what took place. But there are no towns and no telegraph lines here. I must confess I'm utterly lost without a map or a road to guide me.
What was this about a shopkeeper and his family?
Well, shortly thereafter, I came upon a most dreadful sight while trying to ride in another direction to avoid running headlong into the thieves. At a small stream, I found the partially burned remains of a general store. It had obviously been looted. Empty shelves lay among the ashes. Also among the ashes were the bodies of five people, a man and a woman, and the blackened corpses of three children, one a mere infant. Some of the building was still smoldering. It was ghastly. Stuff of nightmares. I'm quite certain it was the same gang of highwaymen who robbed me. And I must find a place to report this to the authorities as soon as possible.
No place behind us, Mr. Grimes. You're welcome to ride with us back to Dodge City to file your report. There's a telegraph and a railroad line. Should be a few peace officers.
But that was the direction this gang was riding, sir.
Like I said, you're welcome to stay with us to Dodge. You'll be plenty safe. You've got my word on it.
I am most obliged.
Later on, Pearlie and Cal rode up to meet the stranger as Smoke was leading the steers across a shallow river. They both gave Grimes curious stares during the introductions.
Name's Pearlie. This here's Cal. You was headed west, now you done changed directions to ride with us. I was just curious about it.
I ran into a terrible situation. I'm new to this part of the country, and I was seeking a military post or a town with a peace officer and a telegraph line to report more than one unlawful incident I had the misfortune to be a witness to. I was looking for someone with the legal authority to do something about it.
Grimes described the troubles he'd been through as well as witnessed.
Your boss assured me I'd be safe with you.
That'd be the truth if you ever heard it in your life. Do you know who our boss man is?
He did not bother to give me his name. However, he is well armed and he seems quite sure of himself.
He's none other than Smoke Jensen.
Oh? The name doesn't ring a bell.
Well, sir, it should. He's just about the most dangerous man with a gun in all Colorado territory if he gets pushed. He was a gunfighter some time ago. Lives real peaceful now running a cow outfit, but I wouldn't want to be the man who crosses him.
Name may not ring no bell with you, mister, but it damn sure does in these parts. Just ask Ram if you got any doubts.
While I've never heard of Mr. Smoke Jensen, it does not mean I have any doubts about his ability to protect me. I'm a fairly good judge of character. Mr. Jensen seems quite capable of handling himself. I do, however, have certain reservations. One man, or even the three of you, won't stand a chance against the men who took my mule and pack saddle. These were ruffians, lawless men by the looks of them. And what they most certainly did to that storekeeper and his family makes them cold-blooded murderers as well as thieves.
Tell us about this gang you mentioned. Did you get a look at them?
I saw them from a distance. There were so many I remained hidden until they rode away from my camp with my mule and my pack saddle.
When you say so many, just how many might that have been?
Oh, perhaps 30. Hard-looking men with pistols and rifles. One appeared to be wearing an old, Confederate uniform.
30? You right sure, Mr. Grimes?
At least that many. Possibly more. I was too frightened to get a closer look to be certain of their number. I knew I stood no chance against them.
That's a sizable bunch of bad men. Hard to figure why there'd be so many traveling together. It's also hard to guess why one of them would be wearing a Confederate uniform so long after the war. That part don't make a lick of sense.
Pearlie, we better help Smoke push the last steers across.
Nice meeting you, Mr. Grimes.
Likewise, I'm sure.
I got this bad feeling in the pit of my stomach, Pearlie. Something tells me Smoke is gonna put us right where this outlaw gang is gonna be. You heard that feller say they were headed for Dodge City, didn't you?
I ain't got no extra wax in my ears, Cal. You can damn well bet we're gonna be right square in the middle of a ruckus if them robbers happen to be in Dodge when Smoke Jensen and the rest of us get there. May as well check the loads in your pistol and rifle right now. I can feel a fight coming.
I warned you that morning I got bucked off. This is gonna be my unlucky trip. I felt it all the way in my bones.
Them sore bones was on account of your fall, son. When you ride with Smoke, you can lay long odds that we'll find a peck of trouble someplace or another.
Smoke said this was gonna be a peaceful trip, that all we was gonna do was take these yearlings to market.
How many times, when we's gone someplace with the boss, have we set out on something peaceful, only to wind up picking lead out of our hides?
A bunch?
Ever watch buzzards circling in the sky? There'll always be something dead underneath. It's a harsh thing to say about a good fellow like Smoke, but the same can be said about trouble finding him. You ain't been with this outfit long as I have. I've seen it a dozen times. We just set out to gather eggs in Ms. Jensen's hen house. And if Smoke Jensen happened to be along, there'd be some owl hoot with a gun hiding behind them laying cages taking shots at us.
You gotta lean in to exaggerate, Pearly. It ain't always that bad. There's been times where it did seem that way. Boss is trying to keep his word to Ms. Jensen to stay away from the other man's difficulties. He wouldn't intentionally break his word to her for anything. It just seems to happen like a rainstorm that comes up all of a sudden.
Got that right. You ever hear of a magnet?
Of course. It draws metal. I seen this fella in Denver on a street corner peddling magnets. He claimed they was magic. That they had magical powers. Made sense to me, cause there ain't no way to explain why one piece of iron would pull another up against it. It's gotta be some sort of magic. That peddler laid out a handful of horseshoe nails on his little table. When he held that magnet over him, they jumped off that table like they was alive and grabbed hold of the magnet like they was stuck with glue. I was gonna buy one just to show folks I could do magic myself. Only they cost 2 bits and I didn't have that much money.
Good God, Cal, it ain't magic. It's got a special kind of metal in it. And there's men who got a special kind of drawing power when it comes to guns and gunplay. Smoke draws them hard-nosed types same as a magnet draws other kinds of metal. You wait and see if I ain't right. I'm betting a month's pay that by the time we get to Dodge, that outlaw bunch will be there, and Smoke will find them, unless they find them first. There's gonna be more bloodletting before this ride is over.
Nuh-uh! Smoke promised Miss Jensen he wouldn't get into no kind of trouble this time.
I'm dead sure he meant it when he gave her that promise. But that don't account for circumstances.
Oh. Circumstances?
You think it might just be bad luck that a gang of murdering thieves is headed for Dodge same time as we are?
But how would they know we was coming, Pearly? And how would Smoke know?
It's called fate. Some men have got the fates dead set against them. Smoke is one of them. Most other men can ride all the way from California to Dodge City without having so much as a loose horseshoe. Smoke don't hardly ever get that kind of peace. It's the hand of fate that keeps guiding him toward the fight.
And all he aimed to do was sell these steers.
Pearly let it drop then. He rode up and down the riverbank, pushing steers into a bunch for the trail running beside the Arkansas River. A road of sorts following the course of the river would take him all the way to Dodge City. Smoke got the lead steers turned east. Pearly rode up to him just as the rest of the herd fell in behind the leaders.
You hear what that feller said about that gang?
He told me.
Well, did Grimes also tell you there was 30 of them?
He did.
Well, did he also tell you about that one wearing a Confederate uniform?
He didn't make any mention of that part.
A slow recollection of something Lewis Longmont had told him a few years ago crept into Smoke's thoughts.
Now, Lewis told me there was rumors that Bloody Bill Anderson was still alive. He figured some killer had dressed in a Confederate uniform and was claiming to be Anderson. Bill Anderson was killed by a posse not too long after the war, and men who knew him positively identified the body. But that's what Lewis said. I wouldn't pay too much attention to Grimes. It's more likely they were only a dozen men or so who stole his mule. Probably a bunch of drifters and saddle tramps who found easy pickings. Same goes for the folks who were robbed and killed at that trading post. It's more likely the work of a gang of misfits and cowards. And one of them just happened to be wearing a piece of old Confederate uniform.
I remember hearing all about Bloody Bill Anderson and Quantrill's raiders. Well, Lewis told you there was rumors he was still alive?
Rumors, Pearly. Stories written up in a newspaper.
I sure as hell hope that that's all they are. Him and Quantrill were supposed to be real mean hombres.
You pay too much attention to a man's reputation. Most times, that's all it is. A batch of made-up stories designed to scare folks. Now, let's get these steers to the railhead before they die of old age while you're worrying about other things. Lewis told me Bloody Bill Anderson was dead, and that's good enough for me. And even if he ain't, he's just another man who bleeds and dies if a bullet hits him in the right spot.